scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right. How we doing? It is a Tuesday. A new week begins after a May-long weekend. It's Tuesday, May 20th, and we're underway this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks for being along with us from our Groundworks downtown studio. It's Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast. Lots to get to on this hour of the program and lots to talk about on this Tuesday. And we might as well dive in on all of it and spin us around the NHL, some Flames topics, and a whole lot more with our buddy, our NHL insider, Frank Saravalli, joins us to kick off the hour. Brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave, or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. Pat Steinberg here. Frank Saravalli joins us now from Daily Faceoff, Amazon, and a whole lot more. Mr. Saravalli, happy Tuesday. How are you?
Pretty good. How you doing, Pat? How was your long weekend?
It was good, man. It was really good, and happy to be back. Lots to get to around the league. We got to talk about what's next for the Maple Leafs. We got to talk about what's next for the two Western Conference teams that have been eliminated, and a whole lot more. But one of the things that we have kind of been talking about and kicking around, but maybe not super in-depth since the Flames season has come to an end, and now that we're just over a month away from free agency opening, I thought I'd get a head start on it with you, my friend, and just ask the question: with free agency opening on July 1st, and yeah, there's going to be some big names available out there on the UFA market. I'm just curious as to how busy you see Craig Conroy and the Flames being in the unrestricted free agent market once we get there on July 1.
I would characterize the Flames as dabblers, a team that'll definitely be paying attention to the market. I don't think it's going to be diving in head first at 12:01 noon Eastern time, but I think a team that will certainly be monitoring it and looking to find some value if they can find it's such an expensive proposition, but find a way to maybe add some goals to this lineup is certainly going to be the thought process.
They definitely have a ton of cap space to work with, but it sure does feel like I know that they had a heck of a year, and I know that there's a lot of excitement about the way this season went and what could be coming next, but it sure does feel like, at least externally, and any conversation I've had with Craig Conroy is that, hey, this is not a group that's going to be trying to accelerate their plan. So I don't see any free agent move that is aimed at trying to fast track the process they're on right now. As you said, it would have to kind of be the type of player that fits with the direction they're going and obviously fills a pretty vital need for them.
Yeah, and to be honest, I don't necessarily see that player fitting anyway. Like, I don't see that player on the open market at this point in time. And with that, then I think you just spend judiciously. You see if you can add a piece or two that's, A, not going to hurt you in term, and B, can add something to your group and utilize the cap space that you have. I think that's exactly what the Flames would be looking at.
Well, the other thing that I think is important is that they really want to see some of these young players take a step, and they want to leave even more room for, whether it's on defense or up front, for players to be able to jump into the lineup and crack the team right away. And you know, I think that there was, I don't want to say a lesson learned, but I think that, you know, this year it took a season-ending injury for Anthony Mantha to get Matt Coronato into the lineup, and we obviously know the type of season Matt Coronato ended up having. I think the Flames, if they could, would like to avoid any type of logjam as well, which also makes me, outside of something that really makes sense and something really targeted, I don't know if we're talking about them going out, even like last year, and signing three or four guys to short-term deals, because I think the next step for them is really wanting to see these young players take that step and make a push in training camp.
Well, that's the other part of it too, right? I mean, you have to, it's a push and pull. It's a chicken and the egg thing, because you don't want to leave spots open to the point where you're handing roster spots to players that haven't earned it. But you also don't want to put players in a position where they feel like there is no spot for them, that there's not one to earn when you get to camp. And I got to tell you that I think that's a big mistake that teams make every single year, is filling out roster spots with vets that don't have the juice anymore, aren't able to hang on and play. And they say, well, you know, we're a team in transition. We can't possibly turn our roster over this much. We need players that, here's another one, the coaches, quote, trust. Okay, well, like, trust is earned. Just because you've played 300, 400, 500, 700 games in the league doesn't mean that you can still do the job now. And that's not to say that vets don't have value or anything like that. It's just that I feel like the pendulum path sometimes swings so far the other direction that players get boxed out and young players end up getting frustrated really through no fault of their own. And I get why they would feel that way.
Yep. What about on the trade front? Is that, I mean, obviously we know that they've got a decision to make on Rasmus Anderson, and that decision may or may not be made this summer, but are we talking about kind of the same idea when it comes to tackling the trade market? Like, if something comes along that makes sense, sure, but maybe not, there's nothing that's, I don't know, that's pressing or that is going to be super tracked down on a Flame side of things. Like, it's more, hey, if this can help the team out, then absolutely we'll look to do it. But it's not like a couple seasons ago or a couple summers ago where they had all those things on their docket and all those things that Craig Conroy needed to start addressing.
I would say, not that your read is off, because I think your read is spot on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're a bit of a wild card in the sense that if the Flames are going to be super aggressive in one department this summer, it's not going to be, probably not going to be free agency. My guess is it's probably not going to be an offer sheet, that it would probably be in trying to make a deal. And with that, it would be to solve for some of the main issues or problems that this roster construction has, which probably can't be effectively addressed during the draft because they're not picking in a high enough zone to get an impact player, and probably can't be addressed in free agency to get a player that fits their age scheme. The only way to do that is to go out and make a trade. So I could see the Flames being pretty aggressive on that front, trying to chase down a top-end center if one, and top-end is going to have to be within reason. Like, teams aren't moving off of those types of players, but maybe there's a second line center that exists somewhere that the Flames see has some potential to maybe do more, whereas played further down the lineup that they've scouted effectively and feel like can add to their team. That would be, if you were to rank all the possible scenarios, I think that's the clear, far and away winner of what the Flames could be doing and could be up to.
Yeah. And as we talked about, it was last week that we talked about how do they go about filling their void for a number one center, and short of drafting one, which you're right, as of right now, they're not picking in a spot that's going to get them that type of player, at least not on the surface right away. That might be the way that they have to go tackle it. And if one of those trades is out there, I think a lot of Flames fans would be happy. So let me ask you this.
Yeah. So the point would be, like, it's a matter of when. And it's really going to be determined by the player himself and whether that team is willing to move on. Because if you're not doing it this summer, then you got to do it next summer. If you're not doing it next summer, then you got to do it the summer after that. Mm-hmm. So the quicker you can get your hands on that player, I think the better off the Flames are going to be, and not from a move the, you know, speed up the timeline standpoint, but from a, you know, getting your hands on one is the hardest part. So the sooner you can do it and have that in your arsenal, the more clear the picture becomes in your process.
Yeah. I guess the question then becomes who that player would be, but that's for the pro scouts, and that's for, because I mean, the last one that's kind of been out there in that same range, like, are you talking about somebody kind of the Dylan Cousins variety?
Yes, exactly like that.
Yeah. Anybody that comes to mind that would be in that realm right now?
off the tip of my tongue, no.
Yeah, which is fair because, hey, I mean, Cousins had been on the block, but I think that if the Flames were able to identify one and somehow pounce on it, I think a lot of Flames fans would be really happy if they were able to identify that. And you know what, Frank? If you take a swing at this point and it doesn't turn out to be that guy, I still think it's a worthy endeavor. I still think it's a worthy task to be tackling at this point because of how much of a void you've got there going forward.
100% agree. That's why I'm saying it's theoretically inevitable. Like Craig Conroy and his staff are going to have to strike at some point so much as they can. Like you can only do what the market dictates. But part of that is also turning over stones around the league, which I think Craig Conroy has really been good at planting seeds and conversations with other managers to say, hey, is this guy available? And the answer is no. But if you call again in 6 months, you call again in a year, the answer might not be no.
Yep.
And so I think he's called on lots of players that there have been whispers about or rumblings about or guys that haven't even, you know, ventured at all their name into the public mill that he's been phoning to ask to see if they could potentially become available. And please take note that I'm a team that would be interested in.
Yep.
That's all work that's been going on behind the scenes for a while.
He's Frank Saravalli. He is our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us on Tuesdays here on Flames Talk, and that's the Flames portion of the conversation, and lots more to get to when it comes to those types of conversations going forward. I guess we have to transition to what happened on Sunday night, and that is the season coming to an end for the Toronto Maple Leafs, a pretty pitiful whimper in Game 7 on home ice against the Florida Panthers. Out in round two are the Maple Leafs. So they're calling it in that market the end of an era. So I guess in your eyes, how accurate is that, Frank? How much of an end of an era was Game 7 on Sunday night?
It's 100% accurate, I believe. Mitch Marner addresses the media today at Garbage Bag Day, and of all the things that he said, the most interesting was the part that he left unsaid, which we never heard from Mitch Marner's mouth, that he wants to remain in Toronto or be a Maple Leaf as a pending free agent. And then you look toward the front office and you see Brendan Shanahan, who's without a contract after rebuilding and rejuvenating the Maple Leafs 11 years ago. He doesn't have a title or a job next season yet. Not to say that he won't, but everything seems to be trending toward the Leafs wanting to make some decisions that are results oriented for a front office that has kept this core intact for so long, 9 consecutive playoff runs without any different results. And so there's that part. Then there's John Tavares and what happens with his impending free agency. There's lots of questions about Morgan Rielly and his ability to, you know, frankly, to skate at this point and defend. There's questions about Austin Matthews and his injury, which he did not reveal specifics on today. And he says that surgery is not required and that with 100% rest or with rest, he can return and become 100% in training camp again, which I think feels at this point in time like a big if. And they've got a lot to sort through, but I think it's safe to say at this point that is 100% fact that the Toronto Maple Leafs will not return in the fall as they've been assembled mostly previously.
Who's the most likely, and look, we know two guys are unrestricted who have been a part of this core for the last better part of a decade. Who's the most likely exit, you know, when we're talking about Marner and we're talking about Tavares leading that parade as pending UFAs? Who's the most likely name to not be back in blue and white next year?
Marner, for sure. I mean, I think he's had one foot out the door for a while. I think he's been open to a change of scenery behind the scenes. He hasn't engaged with the Leafs in contract talks, despite multiple attempts. And beyond that, I think he feels like, despite really doing absolutely nothing, he feels like he takes the bear of the brunt of you know, what is thrown at the Toronto Maple Leafs players for their lack of success. And it's certainly fair to say that it's not all on him, because there, it's called the Core Four for a reason. And the fact that those guys were not collectively successful, and not any one of them has magical or impressive numbers in games 5 through 7 of a series, it's all on them. But he's just the focal point at this moment in time, because as one of the highest paid guys, he's also an 100-point scorer. He's also a free agent. So I think things soured a bit even more so when they went through the process of the trade deadline. And not only did he not engage in extension talks, but then also refused to waive his no trade clause so that the Leafs could make an attempt to bring in Mikko Rantanen. Because if he had done that, I think it's probably safe to say if Marner had waived, Marner is the guy that Carolina had been drooling over. If Marner had waived, Mikko Rantanen would be a Toronto Maple Leaf today. I believe that.
So, and yeah, that, I remember having that conversation with you right after Rantanen went to Dallas. And I know hindsight's 20/20, but if you're Brad Treliving, and I know that Marner wasn't even looking, wasn't even able to, or was able to block a trade and wasn't interested in moving on at the trade deadline. If you're Brad Treliving, what's your thought process knowing that, hey, you're very likely about to lose Mitch Marner for nothing? Is the cap space that you'll acquire with him very likely walking and signing elsewhere, what's the value in that for this Maple Leafs team?
I think it's twofold. I think, one, you try and salvage whatever you can, see if he'll be willing to pre-negotiate, so to speak, and engage with a team for a sign-and-trade to get the eighth year and get a little something in return. And I think more so the value is in the fresh start that comes with it, and not just from a cap perspective, but also just from a deep breath of, hey, we tried it for a long time. He's a really valuable player who undoubtedly, conscientiously helps you get there to the playoffs and is a reason why they've had a big run of sustained success. But one of my big beefs with how teams are built in the NHL is that general managers in this league spend so much time fixated and focusing on what they're losing that they really lose sight of the opportunity cost of what else is out there. And what does that mean? Okay, well, Mitch Marner had 102 points last year. You could take the $13.5 million, $14 million, whatever it is that he would end up getting, and you could spend, this is just a pure hypothetical, you could spend $7.5 million on Sam Bennett. You could spend the other $6 million on getting two other quality players who can provide you 30 points each or something in that neighborhood, and you can get past the 102 that he put up, and your team has a different look and feel. It has different depth. It plays with a different style. Like, I'm not saying that in the end, maybe they'd be better off keeping him. Who knows? But I think at this point in time, enough is enough in terms of trying to make it work. They need a different look, and they need different, I used this word earlier in our conversation, they need different juice in that room. And it's not that he's the scapegoat. It's just that he's the next in line out the door.
What's that contract or deal look like for Matthew Nyes?
It's going to be expensive. I think probably not quite Wyatt Johnson expensive. But that's a nice table setter. I think Johnson was 1 year ahead of Nyes. Of course, he has 2 30-goal seasons under his belt, and they're not even really necessarily similar players. Nyes is certainly much more physical, and I think a really important part of what Toronto wants to do moving forward. He hits everything that moves, and I don't think he's a unicorn, but I think his intensity that comes with his style of play is significantly valuable, and I think that is priority number one for the Leafs over these next 2 weeks. Figure out what's happening in your front office. Is Brendan Shanahan in or out? And then before you do anything with Marner, before you do anything with Tavares, get Matt Nyes done so that you can take the offer sheet off the table?
Frank is, we're talking to Frank Saravalli, our NHL insider, who joins us Tuesdays here on Flames Talk. A couple of other kind of similar questions about a pair of teams that go out earlier than they would have liked in the Western Conference playoffs. There's a Winnipeg Jets team that has been plagued with similar-ish issues to Toronto since going to the Western Conference Final in 2018. The Jets have not been able to get back there. There's the Connor Hellebuyck questions. There's, you know, the Mark Scheifele questions, so on and so forth. What does this summer look like for the Winnipeg Jets after they get knocked out in six against the Dallas Stars?
I think the true answer is not really all that different than what some of the recent summers have looked like. It's hard for the Jets to be a player in free agency. We know that. And they're willing to be aggressive on the trade front. And they've got a ton of cap space to spend. They have a decision to make on Nick Ehlers. I think they could probably use a bit more energy and pizzazz on their back end. That's a big thing. The second line center position, that lack of depth that they didn't get at the trade deadline really showed up when Mark Scheifele was missing in the lineup these playoffs. And so they've got some things to tinker with, to fill and maybe try some different stuff. But by and large, this core is in place. The goalie's in place. Neil Pionk is re-signed and in place. The Jets are probably going to look substantially similar. For all the issues and hiccups that they had in round one, in round two, I just look at the Jets as a team that was outclassed.
Yeah.
I don't know that they necessarily, as disappointing as it was, I don't know that they were beating Dallas, and I don't know that they were beating Edmonton, even if they got past Dallas. So I think they ended up, you know, falling out of the playoffs in probably a spot that makes sense.
And we know that Kelly McCrimmon and that Vegas Golden Knights team does, they don't like to sit idle. And so since winning the Stanley Cup, they've been out in round one, they've been out in round two. What happens in Vegas? How active are they this summer in your mind?
Well, they're always active. Like, if you said to me the Vegas Golden Knights are going to make a significant play for Mitch Marner, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yep.
Oh, okay, well, how are they going to fit him in? Well, they'll just move other pieces out in order to make that happen.
Like they always do.
They do chase. Yeah, they chase the shiny toy. Whenever you think they don't have cap space or assets, they find a way to manufacture them. And I think the bigger question for Vegas is more philosophical. Is this team in its current state, are they capable of winning? And if not, how do you begin to repair that? I think they are. I think they looked incredibly slow in round two. I thought their whole playoff looked uncharacteristic. Alex Pietrangelo, I don't know what he's dealing with. I hope he's all right, because going back to Four Nations, to see a player just voluntarily bow out of the tournament was a surprise, and then to see whatever he's dealing with continue to catch up with him, that hurts. But Pietrangelo's 34, 35. McNabb is older. Shea Theodore, all these guys, like, Jack Eichel is going to be 30 whenever his next new deal starts. Stone, they're all getting up there in age. And I think some of that age showed, and I wonder if that championship window is closing to win. But the fun part about Vegas, or maybe not so fun if you play in their division, is that that window kind of goes up and down like a spring day. If there's some bad weather, it's closed, and it could be right back up to full-blown open status, catching a nice breeze because you just went out and totally changed your roster.
Yep. Last one, Frank, and that's on the conference finals that start on Tuesday night. Eastern Conference final starts in Carolina, and the Western Conference final will start Wednesday in the Western Conference final will start Wednesday in Dallas. What's your read on these two series? Edmonton, Dallas, Florida, Carolina. How are you leaning on each side?
I got Stars in seven, and I got Cats. I got Panthers in six. Really difficult for me to pick against Carolina. I think they're a team that has played a lot better in these playoffs than anyone probably realizes. They've made quick work of two opponents, including the number one seed in the East. They've played with structure. They've stifled a really hot offense. And I think they play very similarly to Florida. I think they actually do it with more pace, and their goalies played better than Bobrovsky. And their defense is much better than the Panthers. But the Panthers have a significant edge in two departments. One is their forward group is deep. It's more higher end. It's stronger. It's definitely more bruising. And two, they've just got that experience where they're not rattled at all. You go down 2-0 to the Leafs. Yeah, okay, whatever. Now the series starts. Sure. Bobrovsky screws his head on straight, and here they go. I don't know how to manage that or how to handicap that when going up against a Canes team that doesn't really have any deficiencies and isn't really bad at anything, but just might not have the firepower unless they can lock it down enough.
Yep. And the Oilers Stars, you got Stars in seven, hey?
I do. Again, another team that I don't really feel comfortable picking against just because of how cleanly the Oilers played in round two against Vegas, and which I didn't see coming based on how they played against the Kings for long stretches. Plus, you could make the real argument right now that the Oilers have the deeper of the forward cores, which I don't know that we would have said at the start of these playoffs. They've all contributed. They've found a way to score. It hasn't just been the McDavid and Draisaitl show, which I think we're all kind of, not that they haven't been good. Of course they've been good, but they can pop off and go to yet another level. I just think this series is going to be totally different than the rematch from last year because the Stars came into that on fumes, playing four defensemen. And now they've got everyone healthy. They're ready to roll. I just think Dallas is a really tough out, and I think they're going to be the team that prevails.
And they've got Rantanen, which is a completely different factor.
Oh, really, more so? They have in net Jake Ottinger.
Yep.
That's the big difference to me.
Yep, also fair. Get out of here, pal. Enjoy the conference finals. We'll reconvene in a week's time. Thank you, as always, Frank.
Sounds good. Have a good one, Pat.
He's Frank Saravalli. He is our NHL insider, Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com. He joins us Tuesdays on Flames Talk, and he joins us brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Tuesday edition of the program continues. It's Pat Steinberg and Logan Gordon along with us this hour on Flames Talk. Logo with us this week on the program. Hi, Logo.
Sorry in advance.
Good to see you as well. Hey, the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award is presented by Hyundai and is given to an individual who through hockey has positively impacted his or her community, culture, or society. The award honors Willie O'Ree, the former NHL forward who became the first black player to play in the NHL on January 18th, 1958, and has spent more than two decades as the NHL's diversity ambassador. After a public voting period and votes from O'Ree, NHL executives, and Hyundai executives, the winner will be announced in June. There'll be a winner from both the United States and here in Canada. Voting continues at NHL.com until May 25th. So May 25th is the cutoff for when voting for the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award finalist comes to an end. And one of the three finalists in Canada this year is based right here in Calgary, is a Calgary product and a former member of the Calgary Hitmen. 103 games as a member of the Calgary Hitmen between 1997 and 1999. Had 27 goals, 81 points, 231 penalty minutes. Won a Western League championship in 1999 as a member of the Hitmen. And if you were a fan of that team like I was growing up in that era, this name is as synonymous with that group as Brad Moran or Pavel Brendel or Alex Fomachev, and that is the gentleman who joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now, a finalist for the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award. It's Brent Dodging Horse who joins us right now. Brent, appreciate the time on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you today?
Pretty good, guys. Just doing a little bit of light ranching, but happy to be on the show.
Well, it's awesome to have you. And so tell us about the light ranching. Like, what are we up to right now?
Just fencing, getting some horses fed and trimmed up, and obviously had some rain here, so just getting ready for our DH Ranch programs to kick off this summer.
Well, and we'll ask you about the DH Ranch program. We'll ask you about all of what you've been doing in Southern Alberta since you wrapped up and since you hung up the skates. But I guess before we get into any of it, I guess just tell us about what this award and this nomination means to you and what it means to be a finalist for the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award.
Well, I think just to have your name mentioned in the same breath as Willie O'Ree and to be a community hero nominee is pretty cool. Good for the ranch and good for the program. But those that know me really well, I don't do those things for the awards. I don't do them for the recognition. I'm doing them for the cause. And I think when we start developing the DH Ranch diversity in the program and whatnot, this was many winters ago. We just felt we needed to do it. And part of it was telling my story through hockey diversity and obviously some of the trials and tribulations that happened. But, and then talking about, you know, just a lot of good things about what sports does for me and what sports does for everybody, especially hockey. And then breaking down a lot of barriers and talking about it, trying to empower the POCs, people of color, Indigenous people, really lifting them and seeing how we can grow their wings. And the program has really been out there and working with industry and partners. And a big part of that is working with the allies and building allies and teaching everybody about the components of the allyship.
What is the DH Ranch program, Brent? If you were to describe how it came to be and where we are now, how would you describe it?
Well, I guess it kind of goes back many years. My grandmother owned the ranch for a long time, and she now passed on. But when she passed on, she had inspiring words for me to keep the ranch going, work with the youth, inspire the youth, keep our culture going, which is our Indigenous culture of Tsutina, and then work with horses. So we use those methods. And roughly about 4 or 5 years ago, we started the DH Ranch again, but kind of opened it up for Indigenous 101 and Indigenous team building in the corporate world, but also the sports world and the sports diversity world. And through that, we work with sports teams and corporate teams, schools, and we really just use my story, my sports diversity story, in about a 45-minute session and talk about what is diversity and what happened to me and how we can be better allies. And it's kind of just an interactive sports program within about 40 to 45 minutes. And, you know, we had some pretty cool partners. Seven Chiefs Hockey Program, which is my cousin Kyle, he operates that program, and Seven Chiefs Champions program, which is Destiny Whitney, which is another sports program. Obviously, the Flames being one of my a real cool partner with CSEC and getting to work with all the prospects and the players and the staff and just going through our sports program. Not they've probably been, you know, honestly, one of my biggest allies and help and cool partners, because we get to collaborate on so many cool events, NHL games, diversity games. I mean, the list goes on. And we've had an opportunity to showcase this diversity program to many of their players and their coaches, their staff. Not only that, but the Hitmen players and the AHL and some of the staff that works at the Calgary Saddle Dome. So that was pretty beneficial. And one of my meaningful partners was the Red Deer Optimist Chiefs. You know, Tyler Lightbound, the AAA coach, reached out, and, you know, we worked with them to develop some sports diversity programs, and they were struggling in some areas. And we just open-heartedly opened up our ranch and developed sports diversity programs. The horse, their culture, and through the ranch, and kind of like a team building 101 at the ranch. And working with also the Calgary Fire. So that was another big partner of ours. And we developed the program to be in the sports area, the hockey area. And Calgary Fire was an awesome partner, and they allowed us to do training to all their coaches and staff and parents.
So, Brent, we're chatting with Brent Dodginghorse, former member of the Calgary Hitmen, up for the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award. So you've mentioned a couple times, you know, kind of using your story to help educate and kind of help spread the word and build allies, so on and so forth. That only, like, you only started telling your story a few years ago, too. Like, that's a pretty new thing for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about 5 years ago when I got, maybe 6 years ago when I got diagnosed with MS. I kind of just wrote down some stuff I really wanted to do in life. And one was to talk about the issues that I had with hockey and racism and discrimination. And that was one thing that I was silenced my whole career. I was told not to talk about it. I was told if I ever brought it up, I'd be blackballed or labeled a troublemaker. But my wife, being an educator for 21 years, we developed a sports development program to where we just wanted to be able to tell a story, educate, make people aware, and give them tools on if this happens in the dressing room, what do you do or how do you go about it, and how to be an ally. Because, you know, if you look at the city of Calgary, 60% are, you know, Caucasian or white, and then the 40% are POCs or Indigenous. So there's a good blend of beautiful people in Calgary. So there's a lot of things that goes in hand with the program to awkward silences and whatnot. So when these comments are made within the dressing room or in the fans, here's a toolbook on how to navigate through it. Not only review it, but also to reconcile, to have that reconciliation so we move forward together. Because sports and hockey, if it wasn't for sports and hockey, I honestly don't think I'd be here today, because it's changed my life and it's been a huge factor for a positive influence in my life.
So, Brent, when you talk about some of the racism and the discrimination that you encountered as you were playing hockey and as you were coming up the ranks, like, what are some of the things that you pass on to others that have really made an impact? What are some of the things that you feel are really important for other people to hear?
I think it's just important to hear my story because, you know, obviously I played 25, 30 years ago, and that their parents may have known me, and they may have talked the stories to the young ones now. So it's important. You know, I played in the Western League, and some of that, you know, there was a lot of that happened in the Western League. And just to make it be known that, you know, I coincide work with the Western League to develop a diversity program. So that's my way of giving back. But to this day, like this day and age, it's still happening in sports and it's still happening in hockey. So how do we overcome it? How do we talk about the awkward silence? Because that's ultimately the hardest thing for people to navigate through, is the awkward silence of diversity and racism when it does happen. Because a lot of time people choose to be silent about it. And I always say in the program that if you choose silence, that's continuing the violence. So we have to learn how to navigate through these awkward situations and just learn how to talk about them and be good people about it.
We're chatting with Brent Dodginghorse. He's up for the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award. He's joining us here on Flames Talk on this Tuesday. It's Pat Steinberg and Logan Gordon along with you on a Tuesday afternoon. Logo?
Brent, first things first, congratulations, man. Even being a finalist must be really cool. How'd you find out?
I think, Candace called me. She said, she called me up. I was on a little trip in Arizona, and I got to talk to you real quick. So she put me on a Zoom, and she said, by the way, you can't tell anybody. So I had to kind of keep my mouth zipped for about 2 months and just kind of do my thing. But yeah, she's obviously, Candace, working with the foundation and working closely with her, and she's such a good ally, and we got a good partnership with the Flames, and I mean, I can go on and on about the impact of what the DH Ranch and Calgary Flames has done on the positive side, the Indigenous game. But there's layers to the Indigenous game of, you know, the elders' teachings to the players, to the coaches, the elders' teachings and ceremonies behind the scenes that we don't show that are significant to our cultures. And there's so many cultural aspects that that fall in line with this, because ultimately at the end, hockey is a traditional game. And, you know, there's two First Nations that claim stake that they invented hockey, but to us it doesn't matter. But the old teachings were hockey brings everybody together, all different sizes, colors, shapes. Hockey is an ultimate traditional game that brings people together. And I think the Flames have, you know, haven't even showed half the stories that we've kind of worked on and collaborated on throughout, you know, the 4.5 years, almost 5 years of partnerships.
I was going to say, talking about working with the Flames and being a former member of the Hitmen yourself, how cool is it for you to see Every Child Matters uniforms come out, the Indigenous game, seeing different CSEC logos, you know, mixed in with the Indigenous culture? And how impactful do you think that is for it to have a more prominent place in such an important sport like hockey? You know, Calgary's all about hockey, and to get that kind of exposure must be huge for what you're trying to do.
Let's just put it this way. Every time I look up into the rafters and I see some of those Hitmen jerseys retired, like Kiss and Kissio and Brad Moran, and I think back from where it was at that time to where it is now, and I just get emotional, because there was no talk about that, and it was hush-hush and certain things that you couldn't even talk about at that time. But now to look at the Indigenous game and what Tyler White and Rob Kerr and Morrissey and all the guys have done for the Indigenous Every Child Matters game, and all the awareness that goes with it, the Calgary Canucks partnering with Siksika. You know, I always had one mandate at the DH Ranch when we were collaborating, is I always said, let's work as a team. Together, everybody achieves more. And, you know, working with the Indigenous people of the Treaty 7 territories and having a representative from each territory to be at the table was so key. And I think, you know, it's just, hockey is such a beautiful game, and what it's done for me and the community. And I think when there's a lot of madness in the world that happens nowadays, hockey is the game that brings everybody together.
I know you've talked about it on your profile up at NHL.com, where they talk about the Willie O'Ree finalists. You talked about your daughter and the impact that she's seen of what you're doing and how you want to, you know, make it a better place for her and future kids to come into the game. How much does that matter to you, seeing her response and seeing other young kids go into maybe a better hockey environment than you started out with?
That's what it was always about, was... At that time, I never knew how to use my voice because I was silenced and I was honestly scared. So every time I talked about my story, it started shaking. And I was almost afraid that people would try, like, that isn't true, or that didn't happen. Or so you have all these fears and frights, and then you start freezing, and then you don't want to talk about it. And a lot of times kids quit hockey, and, you know, the moment they discover, or the moment someone brings up a race or a culture, and, you know, a lot of kids quit. So case in point, I was never the best hockey player around my community. So I just worked hard, but there was so many talented kids, but I saw the racism that happened, and they didn't want no part of hockey because at that time they didn't know how to deal with it. But, you know, going back six years ago, when that happened to my daughter, she just shut down and said, I'm quitting. I'm done, Dad. I don't want to deal with this. And nobody told my coach. Coach didn't believe me. I'm quit. I don't. But, you know, as a family and as a group, we talked about it. And my wife and I just begged my daughter and I begged my wife. I said, let's use this as a tool. Let's use this as a learning experience to teach people on how to be an ally. And I'm gonna just talk about my story, and that's how it started, and that's how we developed that that DHRANS diversity program, which is about 45 minutes, but ultimately through my daughter's story, my wife's story, and my story. So it's had a lot of success, growing pains, and obviously changing the program or changing something within the second page on paragraph two or three. And it's a work in progress, but ultimately at the end of the day, I think it's changed a lot of opinions. It's told a story that probably can never been told before. And it has some Indigenous history and culture in there. It talks about Treaty 7. It talks about treaty sign-ins. And treaty sign-ins were a peace treaty. They were meant to share the lands. But obviously with those peace treaties that government deals, I don't want to get on the political side, but it was ultimately to have a peace treaty. And through that Indigenous education, it was important to tell our story. And it's very important. I guess it's, I'm just proud of it, I guess. And at this point, what it means to us is just, it maybe brings a bigger platform so we can share our story, not only in Canada, but North America, because a lot of these issues happen in North America too.
Brent, you know, you talk about the impact that it's had on your daughter, and you talk about how you've seen people come through the DH Ranch and some of how the education has stuck with them. Like, how do you know that what you're doing is making an impact? How do you know that the education and the stories and all of what you're saying, like, what are some of the things that have made it pretty clear to you that some of this stuff is sinking in and that you are making an impact and what you're doing is starting to make some change?
So for one thing, wife being an educator, Sonia always has emails that go out. So as soon as the presentations are done, we have automatic feedback. So automatic feedback from the schools, from the teams, from the partners, whether it's email or written form. We have feedback that happens right after the session. So 99% of the people write an email or provide insight on what we can change or how we can do it better. But 99% of it is positive and thanking me and thanking the ranch or the diversity story on how the ranch or the topics and conversations were talked about, because that was something that they never knew how to talk about. Maybe that was a word that they've used in the past that created a little bit of controversy. One of the big things was sport teams, school teachers, coaches never knew how to talk about identity. And identity meaning POCs, people of color, Indigenous people, mixed people with mixed culture. They had awkward silence for 2 or 3 years. So they never knew how to introduce their culture or background. Mm-hmm. And the simple question was, asking them, how do you want to be identified? Oh, I want to be identified as an Indigenous person. And it was that simple. So these uncomfortable situations just really needed to be talked about. And, you know, one of the big points was being an ally, because a lot of people, I'd say about 80% of the people, witnessed it in sports and they didn't know what to do or they didn't know how to say it. And if they were scared of being, if they ever spoke up, that they were going to be chastised by their team, by their coaches, by the other parents. But now they feel comfortable that if they spoke up, that they're just doing the right thing.
Yeah. I'll tell you a story. I want to say this had been about 6 or 7 years ago. I was leaving Mount Royal. I was helping out with an event at MRU, and I ran into your brother Kyle, and he's a big listener to the station and recognized me and said, hey, you know, I'm Kyle, and I'm working up at Seven Chiefs Sportsplex, and my brother Brent, you might know him, Brent Dodging Horse, played for the Hitmen. He's doing some incredible work with the Seven Chiefs hockey program, so on and so forth. And I remember having the conversation with him, and Brent, I want to say that was 6 or 7 years ago, and now to see where we are now and seeing you up for the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award and seeing what you've done with the DH Ranch. I'm, you know, when you first started working with the Seven Chiefs hockey program as a proud member of Satina Nation, I'm just curious as to how, I'm trying to think of the right word, but how proud you are and how taken aback maybe you are of how much things have grown here over the last number of years.
Yeah, you know, me and Kyle work together. We talk lots and, you know, just went for lunch today with Kyle. And, you know, it's really concentrated on the future and our daily programs and kind of how far that the program came. The Seven Chiefs program is obviously a community-built program from community members, community elders, and community leaders supported by our leaders. So it's not just one person. It takes a community to build a good program. And our love for hockey and our community is, you can't even put it on a scale. People just love hockey so much around here. And they love the Flames and they love Team Canada. And there's just so many cool stories to go back to the Sportsplex of the older hockey players that used to train there. Tretiak used to be there. Daryl LaPlante brought the Stanley Cup. Danny Heatley. There were so many NHLers that went in and out of the old Sportsplex, and then the new Sportsplex with the partners with the Flames and Team Canada, the Ladies Professional Hockey League. And then, you know, if you really sit at the Seven Chiefs Sportsplex and just have coffee in the summertime, you probably see about 60 to 80 NHLers coming in and out just training there because they appreciate the nation, not blowing them up on social media or putting them on TikTok, but just, you know, just being able to go out there and skate and train. And that's the cool thing about our nation. They just respect the NHLers. They respect the pro hockey players, and they love the interaction. And even our elders, one cool story is our former chief that passed away. He's a leader by the name of Clifford Big Plume. I get emotional telling this story, but he adopted Johnny Goudreau and the Goudreau family. So he is like an adopted member into this nation, and the Big Plume family, you know, brought him out for, obviously, to be on the land, enjoy the land and ceremonies. And, you know, there's a lot of cool ties to this nation and hockey. And I saw Winnipeg Jet boys, Shifley, and, you know, all his four or five power play specialists that were training here through the summertime and just training hard. And, you know, you see them giving high fives to the kids and, you know, just encourage them, but the boys give them their space so they could just train and be themselves. So hockey's been good to our nation, and it's just, man, I can go on and on about the cool hockey stories out here.
That's awesome, Brent. That's a really awesome story, and not just one story, but just period. The whole story you've told with us here over the last 30 minutes or so has been really awesome to hear. And here's the deal: the voting continues at NHL.com for the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award. One of the three Canadian finalists for this year's award is Brent Dodging Horse, who is working with the DH Ranch and the Seven Chiefs Hockey Program, is a diversity consultant with the Calgary Flames, a former member of the Calgary Hitmen, and a whole lot more. Voting continues through May 25th at NHL.com. So let's do all we can for Brent Dodging Horse and see if we can make it another Calgary product, bringing home the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award. Before we let you go, Brent, I was told I had to, Wasey Rabbit wants a shout out. So he said, give me a shout out if we can. I'm like, well, I'll see if Brent has anything nice to say about Wasey. Do you have anything you can say about Wasey Rabbit that'll put a smile on his face?
Oh, just an absolute good guy. You know, when I was talking to Wasey about this, and then I told him, you know, Wasey, I'm not really much into, like, you know, talking about what I do and this and that. And he's like, let me introduce to some guys. I'm going to get some guys to talk to you. But that's the type of guy he is. And, you know, when we talk about Indigenous pro hockey players that made impact in sports, so it's Wasey Rabbit, it's Judd Blackwater, it's Colton Yellowhorn. So those are three prime examples of Indigenous people that excelled in sports and hockey, and they really paved that way, not only through the Western League and pro hockey and the AHL, and played a few games in a show, but they played in Europe. So they're global guys that've been all over the place, and they got this wealth of knowledge. So, you know, they're always like guys that whenever I'm struggling on this topic or I'm struggling about how to talk about this, them are guys that I reach out to and just ask for advice.
Well, first of all, Brent, congratulations on being a finalist. That is awesome to see. But more importantly, congratulations on all the success that you've had with the DH Ranch and with the Seven Chiefs hockey program and a whole lot more. But I guess most importantly, thank you, A, for joining us today. And thank you for the impact you've made in Southern Alberta and making this place a better place to be and doing it through sports and education and everything that you're doing. It's awesome to see. Appreciate the time this afternoon. Good luck as we move towards the announcement in June, and have yourself a great summer. Hey, thanks for doing this, Brent.
Yeah, thanks, Patty. Thanks, Logo. You guys have a good one.
You as well.
Good work.
Thanks, Brent. Appreciate it, man. That is awesome. Brent Dodging Horse joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. He is a finalist for the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award, which will get announced in June. And, you know, with over the last, half decade, Dampy Brar and Kevin Hodson have each been Canadian winners from Calgary. Then you've got Brent, a proud member of Tsuut'ina Nation. And I know that we have got just so many hardcore fans who listen on the nation, and we got some regulars who call in on the Flames Talk post-game show from the nation, and Brent just doing just incredible work over there. He and his brother Kyle with the Seven Chiefs hockey program, and obviously what Brent's doing with the DH Ranch. More information on the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award, the Canadian nominees, and some awesome, awesome stuff on Brent over at NHL.com. Thanks to Wasey Rabbit for helping set that up, and thanks to Brent for joining us as we start to wrap this up, wrap this hour up on Flames Talk. As that is Brent Dodging Horse, he joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline.